Welcome to the Full Press Fantasy Pod, part of Full Press Coverage. My name is Kyle Senra, and here with a reunited trio, Kayla Morton and Alessandro Senator. Alessandro, how's it good to be back from the injured reserve?
Look, man, I had to do my 3 weeks because, you know, we have to follow strict NFL protocol here, and I heard it got a little more intense, but they allowed me back from IR, you know, after a while, so I got out before that intensive. You have to be on it just a little bit longer. And all my tests came back negative, so I'm fine.
And you returned to play me this week, so I hope you're ready for your L. And
oh,
I'm excited.
Oh, my God. You don't understand how bad this is.
The first thing she says is brag. I love it.
I mean, she has every right because in her starting lineup alone is Patrick Mahomes, who's facing a Raiders defense that put, like, 9 guys on IR. And then she has... Who is the other person? Justin Jefferson. She has Justin Jefferson against the Dallas defense. Oh, my God. Those two alone are going to break my team.
Well, just explain your quarterback situation before the trade, which I still would like to sniff a little bit that I think could have a little bit of collusion to it. I might let it go because I'm sitting above everyone in the league. So I'll give you the benefit of the doubt, maybe a little bit.
So, Alessandro, okay, well, let's hear some words about this trade. So what was it? It was Donovan Peoples-Jones and a 4th for Alex Smith?
Yeah, I was desperate. Well, I mean, Josh Allen's out this week, and Darnold is out this week, so I had to scramble for quarterbacks. The only quarterback I saw was Joe Flacco. I was like, God, here we go. And then the only other quarterback that was available on that list was Taysom Hill, and I dropped him for Joe Flacco. Malcolm Perry and Garrett Gilbert, Dallas. I was like, I don't know what kind of rotation Dallas is going to do. So I was like scrolling through the list to see who's available, who could give me a quarterback. I saw that Dougie had Big Ben and Lamar Jackson, and then on his bench he had Alex Smith. I'm like, maybe I could steal Alex Smith for real cheap. No one else had a quarterback I wanted or need or wanted to pay a high price for. So I was like, hey, Ducky, what would you do for Alex Smith? I'll give you a late rounder for him. And sure enough, I get a trade offer to get Donovan Peoples-Jones and Alex Smith. I was like, you know what? I don't care. Donovan Peoples-Jones is not going anywhere in that offense. So I sent it to him. I said, I paid a little bit more than I wanted. He goes, I thought that was a fair deal. I said, no, it's not. I'm getting an aging quarterback that's probably going to be gone next year, and you got a 4th-round pick and a possible prospect. How the hell is that fair? He goes, were you desperate enough? I'm like, yeah, I need a quarterback this week at least. So,
well, the two things that raised an eyebrow for me was that you played last week with 1 quarterback, right? So you didn't need a quarterback. If you were fine last week playing with 1, you didn't need 1 this week. And that came after we had already chatted in the group message about how you only had 1 quarterback. And you made your comments about Patrick Mahomes that you already brought up and Justin Jefferson. And I was like, oh, you're starting Flacco. And then I was like, oh, dang. Josh Allen's on bye, and then 20 minutes later, boom, boom, trade, and I was like, oh, this is fishy, this is fishy.
Well, you told me I could get PJ Walker, and the last time we saw him, bad things happened, so I don't
trust
him.
He could be a starting quarterback, and you wouldn't have had to give up a pick and a prospect, so it could have been a smart decision, but no, don't listen to the person who's 8-2, no.
Instead, listen to the person who's 3-6? Or 3-7. We did play a game last week. But truthfully, Kayla made a good point. I mean, why did you need a quarterback? You'd picked up Flacco, so you can submit a legal lineup. Again, super flex. You're 1-9. Clearly not going to make the playoffs. Why do you want to win? Don't you want to lose and secure the first overall pick?
I mean, looking at the league itself, I'm definitely going to secure the 1 overall pick because I got 8-2, 3-7, 6-4, 6-4, 5-5, 6-4, 2-8, 6-4, 7-3.
Well, that's the thing though. That's only 1 win ahead of you, right? Like you're not that far off from, I believe it's Christian, right? Like, you know, if you win one game and he doesn't, suddenly you two are tied. Like, you know, there's a bit of risk there. I mean, I'm at three wins. So I'm not that far ahead, apparently, either. So,
well, that's true. But here's the thing. I look, unlike the Jets and very other teams in the league, I'm play to win. I don't care what it is. I'll let the cards fall where they may. I play to win. And I wanted damn two quarterbacks. And I was not happy having to play Robbie Anderson in that place last week. I did it anyways, but I was not happy to do it because I want to play two quarterbacks in a Superflex league. So that's why I did it.
To be fair, there is upside on your side, Alessandro. If Alex Smith starts games next year, it's probably much better value than anything that Donovan Peoples-Jones is going to get. I mean, it's, you know, he's a late round rookie, so not much draft capital on a right now on a very run heavy team. You know, not a great position to be in, and who knows what the 401 is going to be. Again, assuming you still finish last.
Regardless, I'm looking at the first or second pick unless just somehow I start winning all these games and really screw up my chances. But, I mean, I'm good. 101, 102, 103 at the very latest is what I'm looking at. I could get a really good prospect that's coming into the league by then. So, I mean, I'm fine. I'm either going to get one of the top three quarterbacks, Justin Fields, Trevor Lawrence, or Trey Lance. Or I could just go with Travis Etienne that's going to come into the league and just blow everyone away. I mean, so I like my chances at one of the threes. The competitor in me is playing to win.
Well, because I know if I was you, what I would do, I'd probably package, try and trade down, get extra assets. Especially if you're kind of saying you don't really, you've got a few list of players as long as they meet that threshold. So I would, you know, trade within that threshold, try and trade down and accumulate as much as possible. Definitely know Ducky wants Travis Etienne more than anything. He's already made that known. So you've already got a natural trade partner there. But I mean, truthfully, that's a really cheap price to pay for a quarterback. So I will say, you know, kudos to you there. I wonder about the motivation behind it, but I mean, it's, you know, it certainly is admirable of you to want to try and win, and I'm sure it helps that you're playing Kayla. You definitely want to beat her, so.
I mean, there is a degree of wanting to rub in Kayla's face.
Yeah, because she's never going to hear the end of it if she loses to a 1-19 that's last in the league in points.
Yeah, no, she won't.
There's pressure on you this week, Kayla, maybe more than any other week.
I mean, it could be worse. You could lose to an 0-8 team.
Like, yeah, and as soon as that went final, I put that GIF in the group chat. I was watching on Monday Night Football, and I saw that you were up by, like, 20, and I was like, oh, man. No, I was ready.
I was looking at it, like, oh, it's going to be close. It's going to be close. And then I was like, yes! Won by 3 points.
I had Dalvin Cook in a league, and I needed him to score, and I was like, I will sacrifice my win in this league for him to not produce anything else.
Oh my god, it was so great watching Dalvin Cook not cook. Like, I was like, all right, he's getting to the threshold. He's getting the points, he's getting the yards. No, stop, stop, stop. And I was like, yes. I was more excited about that than the game itself.
I mean, we are in the fantasy podcast for a reason. We do tend to like this.
Well, yeah. But, I mean, it's just, I play a win, and that's always how I've been. Even when I lose, I'm still pissed off about it. But, I mean, all the guys that I have that I could even think about trading away, I don't want to because they're young, they're up and coming. Like Michael Pittman, Chase Claypool, the Josh Allen. I wouldn't say Cole Beasley's up and coming, but he's definitely booming now. And then I got my prospects with Bryan Edwards and Van Jefferson. It's just, I mean, I could trade away some other guys, but I mean, it's neither here nor there. And I know where Kayla's about to go with this.
I was going to say, you mentioned Van Jefferson. So, Kayla, what do you want to say?
Well, Josh Reynolds, you know, has been the Rams' leading receiver for the last 2 weeks. So if anybody remembers, I said that Josh Reynolds was going to heavily outproduce Van Jefferson this year. And it looks like through 10 weeks, that's holding true. I think because teams have Cooper Kupp and Robert Woods on their radar, he's just been a target in the pass game. He has 19 targets in their last two games, 9 against Miami and 10 against Seattle. And he's caught 12 of them. He had 81 yards and 80 yards, respectively, in those games. Does have a tough test against Tampa Bay this week. I'm not sure how high scoring that game's going to be. I kind of project a low scoring game in that one. Could be a defensive battle. I mean, we saw how the Rams held Seattle last week to a low scoring game. So I think it'll be interesting. I think you should temper your expectations for Rams receivers in general, but Reynolds. But I mean, I would add him, especially in PPR, because he's getting those looks. And even in the game before that, in week, let's see, what week was it? Week 7, because they had a week 9 bye. He even had 8 targets against Chicago, and he only played 74% of the snaps. So, you know, he's getting the looks in Sean McVay's offense. So, despite what Sean McVay is saying about how much he likes Van Jefferson, it's not showing on the field. So, I'm going to stick with my Josh Reynolds call.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking through him. He got 2 points week one, 4 points, 4.3 week two, 6 in week three, 4 in week four, 5.6 and 5. And then he shoots up to 11.5 against San Francisco, 13.2 against Chicago in week seven, drops to 6.4 against Miami. He's on the bye. And now he's at 13.4 against the Seahawks last week, and now he's got Tampa. I mean, the way he's been going up and down, even here, like in a fantasy article, it says the main issue for Reynolds is not lack of talent. Instead, it's the lack of talent in front of him in a depth chart. Because of that, he's just not receiving high enough volume to be a consistent fantasy threat on a weekly basis. He'll face the Seahawks again to begin the fantasy playoffs in most leagues. So, and what you say about what McVay says, I think it's hilarious too, that he will talk about, because people will be like, why are you not playing the rookies more? You see them producing and you see them doing good, but then you pull them. He goes, well, I am very much, you know, all for Van Jefferson and Cam Akers and the other rookies producing. I like them. They're going to be very productive in this offense going forward. Dude, I'm looking at the snap count. They're not out there at all. What are you talking about? Like, are you serious?
I mean, Cam Akers finally started to get some serious red zone work last week, which is nice, but he still ended up Brown with the touchdown. So, it does seem as though Reynolds is starting to establish himself as that number three target, which in this Rams offense, a couple years ago was able to sustain three wide receivers very clearly, and then last year it seemed like that might gear towards the tight end. So I think we all expected that to be Higby, the number three on this team, and so far that really hasn't been the case, and it has been Reynolds, especially of late. So I think the trend probably continues. I mean, they're winning games this way too. If they were losing, this is clearly not working. But if they've been winning games with Reynolds as a bigger focal point, I expect it to continue. So I know there's a couple leagues I have him in where he's deep enough leagues where he's basically an every week starter now. If he's going to have this type of target share. So I've got, even against a tough defense against the Bucks, I'm still going to play him just because of the opportunity, knowing that, yeah, the upside might be capped this week. But, again, when you have to play 13 starters, you kind of can't really get too picky with who you start. So,
I mean, I might play him too. And, after this week, his schedule for the playoffs is promising. I mean, in week 13, which is a lot of times the final week before the playoffs, he's in Arizona, which is a favorable pass defense matchup. Then he plays New England, which could arguably be his toughest defense that he'll face. But then he gets the Jets in week 15 at home. He has a voluminous Seattle defense in week 16. And that could be your championship week for most of your leagues. Week 17, it's Arizona again. So that screams start in every way, especially in deep leagues like Kyle was talking about.
Oh, especially even just looking at the snap count. I mean, you got Jared Goff at 100%. The next person behind him is Tyler Higbee. And then behind him, Josh Reynolds and Robert Woods are ranking out at 80% on the snap count. Then there's Gerald Everett at 61% and Cooper Kupp's at a bombing 53%. So, and then you see Van Jefferson down here at 19% and Cam Akers at 26%.
I'm surprised it's as high as 19%, to be honest, because we really haven't seen much of Van Jefferson.
Well, listen to this, 15, 4%, 5%, 26%, which is one of his best days, came in week 5, 5%, 12%, 38%, and 45%. That's when they were experimenting with the offense early in the season, but I don't know. We'll find out going forward what's going on.
So some other players we really haven't seen much of lately, injuries abound throughout the league. But we're looking at Christian McCaffrey, Joe Mixon, and Kenny Golladay. In some cases, first round picks for McCaffrey, but certainly first, second round pick for Mixon. And I know I took Golladay in the second round in a couple spots. So, even mid second in some instances. So, some serious fantasy capital been put behind these players and, continue to miss a lot of time. So, what do you think about those three situations? There was maybe talk last week of McCaffrey being ready for week 11, but now it seems as though he won't be, and not really sure at this point, what the Panthers are going to plan there.
Yeah. So about McCaffrey, he was projected to start this week, going off last week, and he had a second opinion on his injury to his shoulder. They're saying that it's not anything serious, that he just bruised it, that he just needs some time. He has what they say is an AC joint injury that he suffered in week 8, and he re-aggravated it, on November 8th, and he re-aggravated it. So we're just looking at him possibly just, maybe another week for sure that it'll sit him. So that way he could be 100% coming back in. But honestly, they're thinking about shutting him down for a year. So that could be a huge blow to a lot of people. But I will say Mike Davis has been a wonderful backup since McCaffrey's been down. So I would be tentative to all of the McCaffrey owners. Watch out for McCaffrey because he may be shut down for the season if he's out next week.
I was going to touch on a couple things that Alessandro said. So going along with the timetable for return for McCaffrey, Joe Person from The Athletic reported that he actually doesn't have a timetable to return. Because of that AC joint injury, it is possible that Carolina shuts him down for the entire season. He hasn't been practicing. He hasn't even been getting any reps, even on the side, on the non-contact jersey. It's important to note. He could be on IR until next year if they intend to do that. And so looking at this week especially, Mike Davis, they're going against Detroit. And Detroit has yielded the most points to opposing backs in the NFL this season. So that's huge. So I think he's a must start everywhere. If you have him, he's in your lineup. You have him because you're going to play him because McCaffrey was injured. So there's no reason for him to be on your bench. And he could be your starter, going into the playoffs, because honestly, I don't see why Carolina, are they third in the division, whether or not they're third or fourth? I think it's a long shot for them to be a playoff team. I know that it's expanded, but I don't see them, making a deep run into the playoffs if they get there. So bringing McCaffrey back doesn't do them a lot of good, and it can make an injury worse. So I don't work in the NFL. I don't work for the Panthers, but I'm not saying it's a lost season, but thinking long-term and stability of running backs, we've seen Todd Gurley's decline, even though he's doing better in Atlanta this year than I think a lot of people were expecting. I would keep him as healthy as possible for as long as possible, and I would shut him down.
And speaking of the Panthers, you also have Teddy Bridgewater with an MCL sprain on that knee that he did suffer a devastating injury a few years ago. Doesn't appear to be serious. Unsure if he's going to play this week. It may look point towards no, but which is why, Philip Walker was potentially an option for Alessandro to go pick up.
PJ Walker.
Pretty sure P stands.
That could be his name, but I'm calling. But if you call him anything but PJ Walker, won't have problems.
Just because I've seen it pop up everywhere, Philip Walker. All right, fine. PJ Walker, Pajama Walker. There. You like that jam? And apparently Joe Mixon jammed up his foot, because again, we haven't seen him and it's been close to a month now. Returning here. I didn't actually rank him this week. What have you two heard about Mixon?
I have a friend that is a Bengals fan, and he, whether I like it or not, he will tell me about the damn Bengals. So what I was hearing from him, from Mixon, is that we will not more likely see Joe Mixon this week return to action. He didn't practice on Thursday, and he was set out of Wednesday's practice, so it doesn't look like he'll play. With him, T. Higgins, he was set out of practice on Thursday with an illness. We don't know what kind of illness it is and if that'll affect him for the game because of the COVID rules and because of the things that they want to make sure that everyone did not get. He doesn't want the spreading. There we go. he was there. AJ Green did not practice Wednesday. I think he had a rest day, but he was a full practice Thursday, so we're going to see him. And Mike Thomas, he was the limited practice Thursday. He had hamstring injury, and so he popped up on a depth chart on Thursday's practice. So his game time status is in question, because hamstring injuries popping up in the middle of the week are a little troubling, but we'll see how he goes.
So just to add on the Mixon thing, Tyler Dragon from the Cincinnati Inquirer reported that Mixon is trending to missing his fourth straight game since he hasn't been able to practice in any limited capacity since obtaining that injury on October 18th when the Bengals lost to the Colts. However, he did say that the Bengals are going to wait to officially designate a ruling for Mixon to see if there's going to be any field activity on Friday's practice for the team. So it sounds like Mixon is trending towards having the possibility of being able to practice in a capacity, but they're not certain that he's going to be able to get there. So it sounds like he's kind of getting on the mend, but the mend is not getting over that hurdle. So my guess is that Giovanni Bernard gets another start and that we revisit this in week 12.
And it does seem like it'll be one of those things where if Mixon's out, we may know that by Friday. They may say, okay, he didn't practice Friday, he's sitting out. But if he does practice somewhat, but they're still not sure, they may wait until Sunday morning, right? So like that could be one where, you know, pay attention. I mean, T. Higgins, just, you know, with Alessandro, you're saying the illness, right? And let's say it's not COVID. Let's say, you know, he's just sick. Keenan Allen had a similar bout a few weeks ago where he was questionable basically right up until game time, because if you're sick at all, I guess they're extra testing. I guess the NFL's kind of gone into fuller COVID protocols anyway, so probably every player's gonna have to wait to get tested. So basically every player is gonna be questionable no matter what. But I think with Higgins, it'll begin to just be paying attention to that, because he's probably gonna have to pass a certain number of tests beforehand before able to play. So Devontae Adams, pay attention. We know the Packers are, certainly on the more cautious side of teams, it seems like, with injuries. So the downtrend, especially Alessandro was saying, injury popping up. In this case, it didn't pop up, but limited Wednesday to did not practice Thursday could also mean Wednesday was not really a full day anyway. So, limited, at that point is not as important. But, yeah, certainly not practicing Thursday, not a good sign for Adams. So definitely watch out. Key wide receiver there.
The other wide receivers that you have to watch out for is Alan Lazard. He was still limited in practice 2 days, mm-hmm. So I mean that's not bad, but something you gotta watch out. I don't know if people still have him on their team, but St. Brown, he elevated from did not practice to limited practice, and Robert Tonyan, he was limited practice, but he has an ankle injury versus Alan Lazard has a core injury, and ankles tend to scare people a little bit more. So, I mean, those are the only guys I can see people actually picking up because of this disaster of a wide receiver season.
I get the sense Lazard's going to play just because core injury doesn't necessarily affect his ability to run properly or risk of further injury. It was really just once that healed up and he's good to play. So I think if he's out there practicing, I get the sense he's going to play. And especially if Adams doesn't play, he's going to have a massive role. But yeah, I'm not – Equanimee St. Brown really hasn't been involved. Really, it's tough to find any receivers involved. But Tonyan's I didn't really love the matchup, and we'll get to it in the rankings maybe later. But I definitely lowered Tonyan down from where he has been before. And, obviously the injury doesn't help either. But yeah, it does not a great week for the Packers in general, I don't think, fantasy-wise. Obviously, Adams would be a must-start. I think Lazard's in that territory, too, and so is Aaron Jones. But outside of that, I'm not going to rush to go out and play Packers players that often this week.
Well, before we get to the rankings, there is one injury I want to talk about. That's the Jets and the Colt Chargers game. I mean, because a lot of people probably won't be ranking up on Chargers players. We did see Joey Bosa come back into action, and they don't really have anyone but Tyrod on the offense that is not practicing. Casey Hayward Jr. was limited practice. He was full practice. Then he downgraded to limited in practice. And Bulaga, their tackle, went from full practice to limited. Same thing with their Freeney, their guard. He went from full practice to limited practice. So that could be a matchup they might want to exploit because the Jets don't have a pass rush. But they do have some guy that's up and coming, Bryce Huff. He's been actually getting through people a lot more. Plus, with Casey Hayward Jr. downgrading, pretty sure he's a slot receiver, so that gives Jameson Crowder a huge boost. And looking on the Jets side of it, Mekhi Becton, he's going to be back in, so that's definitely going to help the offensive line. He went down with that chest injury during the Patriots on that Monday Night Football game, but that was just him getting over a cold, they said. They did MRIs the whole nine, and he just pretty much ran out of breath. And Sam Darnold is not going to play again because the ACL thing that we were talking about earlier with
AC joint.
AC joint, I'm sorry. AC joint that we're talking about with McCaffrey. Might as well be an ACL at this point. Damn. So he is not going to play. So Flacco's going to be in. And then because kickers matter, Sam Ficken, he will play. He went to full practice. But Breshad Perriman, the wide receiver that we actually might play, he was still limited practice. Now he has a damn shoulder injury. Last week it was an ankle injury, and before that it was a core injury, and before that it was some other injury. So I'm pretty sure he's going for a record of being injured on the list for every single thing that you could possibly think of. But he is questionable to play, so they don't know.
Well, I will say kickers do matter. I don't know that Sam Ficken matters. I mean, I don't know. The Jets are not an offense you want to be invested in, especially not for a kicker.
No, right. But Crowder, that's one you don't. That's the only one you want to invest in.
Crowder's amount of target share basically makes him a must start anyway, regardless of how tough the opponent is. So yeah, Crowder's fine. But outside of Crowder, I'll have Flacco going in a couple super flex leagues just because, as Alessandro just said, you want to get those two quarterbacks in so badly. And it's a somewhat of a decent enough matchup against the Chargers. They have been allowing a lot of production, but yeah, don't roster the Jets kicker, people. Sorry, Alessandro.
Teddy Bridgewater, Tom Pelissero reported that he's unlikely to play for Week 11. So we did talk about PJ Walker. However, Matt Rhule said that they are giving first team reps to Will Greer. So in fantasy, if you are quick to pull the trigger on PJ Walker, it looks like they haven't ruled out the possibility of Will Greer playing, but they also haven't ruled out that Bridgewater could start. So even though he's looking unlikely, from an hour ago that Pelissero reported that he's unlikely to play, Walker also may not be the starter. So keep your eye on that if for some reason you are determined to play PJ Walker. It looked like Alessandro was close, so he's not the only one, probably. But something to keep note of, James Robinson, Jacksonville number 5 running back in the NFL, by the way, practiced in limited fashion again today with a shoulder injury. I mean, so far we haven't heard anything that he is in danger of missing Sunday's game against Pittsburgh. They're reporting that he should practice in full on Friday. But if he doesn't, it's important to note for fantasy purposes, if, you know, with all these injuries going on, that backup, hopefully I don't butcher his name, Divine Ogzebo, it probably isn't going to play with a hamstring injury. So that elevates Kyle's favorite person, Dare Ogunwale? How do you say that?
Really close. Ogunwale, but yeah. Okay. Basically had it.
He is probably available in your leagues, even in Dynasty, most likely. Pick him up in case Robinson can't start. He is going to most likely back see an increased snap share. You know, Robinson comes in limited at all, which is important because if Robinson is full, I'm calling a Jacksonville upset this week and they beat Pittsburgh. So I hope Robinson plays.
Take that, Minka Fitzpatrick.
Well, obviously. But I think Jacksonville wins this one at home. I don't really know why, aside from James Robinson, but I'm ready to call it for Jacksonville. But Robinson has to be a full participant, and he has to start for that to happen. And if he does, it's going to happen. It's going to happen.
It would make me feel better about the Packers almost losing to the Jags last week. So,
well, they had a lot of defensive guys out, so more understandable.
To be fair, I thought the offense was worse than the defense. I thought the defense actually was the better unit of the two. I think I blame that on the offense more.
Okay, well, I don't know then.
Listen to the Packers pod a couple episodes ago. We did the Colts preview now, but listen to the Jags recap. Jesse and I really, really didn't enjoy that recap all that much, but a win's a win. The one thing about Ngubuwole is he was already going to see an increased role anyway with Chris Thompson out. He's now basically the main designated pass catching back, and if he adds in a bunch of carries on the ground with Robinson hurt, then yeah, that is, you know, he definitely gets into the starter territory, low end flex starters at the least, especially in PPR leagues. So yeah, Dario Ogunbowale. I guess the one thing we didn't touch on was Bridgewater's former team, Drew Brees, hurt.
And that's important because, not to cut you off, but I don't know if all fantasy apps are doing this, but ESPN, if you play on that platform, has designated Taysom Hill as a tight end and quarterback. So even though we don't know if Hill is going to be taking any snaps at quarterback or being a running back or catching passes as a wide receiver or a tight end, you can play a potential quarterback as a tight end. So if you're like me and picked up Jameis Winston and Taysom Hill, you could potentially be playing two quarterbacks at one time.
That's true. It means so many tight ends. If you don't have an established one, and that list this year seems like it's really, really, really small, it's all touchdown dependent anyway. So Hill's chance of scoring probably pretty good.
He had a punctured lung and some broken ribs, and he's getting a second opinion. Right now they said he's going to be out for 2 to 3 weeks, could be longer.
It definitely will be longer, I promise you that.
Well, I'm just going on what has been reported.
Now we can get to the rankings, I think. Is there a position either of you want to start with?
Let's just go running backs because it's the first one listed. We were already talking about New Orleans, and you have Alvin Kamara. And it makes sense because without Breeze, he should be in line for a lot of touches and to kind of bail out whoever's there. What?
He missed practice Thursday with the foot injury thing. This just reminded me of it.
Same thing last week too, right?
Yeah, with a foot injury, he missed the entirety of Thursday's practice session. He's saying that he's good to go, and he's saying that he's going to be all right. I don't know what it is, but Kamara, Drew Brees, Josh Hill, and Dwayne Johnson were all Thursday's did not practice. As far as Wednesday's go, he was limited in practice. So I don't know what happens, but we'll see. But fantasy owners, beware that Kamara may not play. I were saying, yeah, I'm good. I'll play this weekend, because I've seen people who say that, and then they're like, nah, you're sitting this week.
Yeah, I'm going to disagree with Alessandro, and I'm going to start him everywhere that I have him. But I mean, yeah, monitor the situation. But okay, Mr. 1-9. But yeah.
If you lose, this is going to make things so much sweeter.
That's fine. I'm going to roll with that I'm not until I do. So yeah, I'm confident in Kamara, especially with the unknown quarterback situation still late in the week.
Are you more confident in Kamara or your ability to beat Alessandro this week?
Yes, both.
And really, if you want to downgrade Kamara, I could see, you know, Dalvin Cook against the Cowboys. That's probably just as juicy of a matchup as what Kamara has against the Falcons. Josh Jacobs against the Chiefs. He did pretty well against them last time. Is that repeating? I'm not sure. Derrick Henry against the Ravens. That's a tough defense, but it's Derrick Henry. It's... I could maybe see it just swapping with Cook. I have a hard time seeing anyone but Kamara or Cook as the number one. So that's why I kind of think like it's those two at two, one and two, and kind of just interchange.
Yeah, I think what could hurt Dalvin Cook is the fact that, you know, Dallas's defense just has so many holes that even though Kirk Cousins doesn't attempt a lot of passes, like Alessandro alluded to earlier, Justin Jefferson has a great matchup. We could see Adam Thielen get some long balls and just, you know, catch passes all over the field. We could see Kyle Rudolph get involved like he has been over the last few weeks and just have some more involvement in the passing game that could take some touches away. But it's still Dalvin Cook, and he should find the holes and the lanes against a poor Dallas defense. So I wouldn't be too worried about production. I mean, but it could be, you know, in the second half and they're up by so much that, you know, Alexander Mattison comes in, or they feature both of them because, you know, in all honesty, Minnesota should win this game easily. I know Dallas gave, you know, Pittsburgh some issues, but even though Minnesota's 4-5, I don't think this game should be close as it gets into the second half. I just don't see why it is. I think Minnesota can win big in this game, and they don't need Dalvin Cook to, you know, run for four touchdowns, sorry, Kyle, in order to do so. So that doesn't deter me away from making him a must start and thinking that he could be a top five back. But, you know, don't be surprised if you see some handoffs to Alexander Mattison and he has, you know, 10 to 13 carries or something like that.
That's true.
I will say the Dallas defense is averaging 157 yards per game on the ground, but through the air, they're only averaging 224.6. That puts them between the Patriots and the Bears in the upper half. But there is that stipulation, and this is what happened with the Jets last year. They don't have very far to go, so there's not that many yards getting racked up. That's my only stipulation. But their secondary has been suspect at times, and it's been really good at other times. So I don't know what Justin Jefferson will do. I just know that Dalvin Cook will probably, you know, cook something up.
That was a hot joke.
Ooh, sizzling. I want to talk about Josh Jacobs a little bit too. I think when we saw Vegas play Kansas City earlier in this season, it was an outlier game for Kansas City. If you look at points given up, they haven't given up 20 or more than 20 points to anybody but Vegas. And it just seemed kind of uncharacteristic for their defense, kind of like they were chasing them in circles. We saw two long touchdowns to Vegas receivers. And honestly, Henry Ruggs hasn't really done anything since that game for them. And, you know, then when Kansas City tried to blitz to cut that off, Carr used check down passes to beat them. And I don't think that happens again. Kansas City's had 2 weeks now to prepare for that with their bye week last week. And I think Josh Jacobs is going to have to carry that team. And with so many question marks on defense for Vegas, I think this could be a blowout for Kansas City. And the only thing that scares me is that Vegas could be down by a lot, and this game could maybe not be close, and they might have to turn away from running. But if you think this game is going to be close and they're going to have to move the ball really only with Jacobs, and you could maybe throw in Darren Waller as the only reliable pass catcher in this game, then that's why Jacobs is going to be so high on your list. But honestly, I picked up the Chiefs defense in a couple leagues, and I think they win big here.
That's a good point. And sometimes, yeah, those, you know, the teams that are blowing out other oppositions, even if it's not a great defense, forces opponents into pass heavy situations, accumulate sacks or interceptions potentially. So it does make sense going after the Chiefs defense.
I think that we should raise Clyde Edwards-Helaire and Le'Veon Bell, just because I think that once they get up like four touchdowns, that's just going to be a ground game. And I hope that they bench Patrick Mahomes after he throws like 300 yards and only one touchdown and just keep running the ball after that. So that way a certain person doesn't keep racking up points.
Why even hope for one touchdown? Why don't you just hope that it's like they score six touchdowns on the ground and none of it goes to Mahomes?
Because, you know, Mahomes will always throw at least one.
I think I do agree with you with Le'Veon Bell, especially the uncertainty behind Clyde Edwards-Helaire. I think, yeah, Bell definitely at 39 right now, which has been more reflective of his usage in the couple games with the Chiefs now. But, yeah, if Edwards-Helaire is limited at all, then, yeah, I think Bell probably skyrockets up this list. Maybe even to the top 24. Certainly into the top 30, though, I think.
I think you have to raise Mike Davis too, especially since we already talked about Detroit giving up the most points to running backs, and we know Christian McCaffrey's out. So him at 16 seems a little bit low to me. I'd be comfortable moving him in front of Miles Sanders and then at 8 and in front of James Robinson if he's limited at all.
It was pretty high. I will say he probably does deserve to be ahead of Drake, Gurley, even James Conner.
Can't believe I'm saying this, but I think Zeke is too high. I think he needs to be a lot lower. We're just seeing a lot more Tony Pollard than we are Zeke. And listen, people, I understand. Don't come shooting at me, throwing things in my DMs. I get it. But, I mean, just seeing the way they're using Tony Pollard more and more than Zeke ever since his couple fumble game, it's just we're not seeing the same Zeke, especially without Dak. We're just not seeing what he used to do, what he used to be, how fearsome. Excuse me, how fearsome he was, because when they had Dak, he was pulling a 27.7, 22.2, tapered off a little bit, 17.8, 20.5. And then once they lost Dak, he's down to a 12, a 6, an 8, and an 8. Those aren't even high 8s. And but then, you know, you look at Pollard, who, you know, I guess he decided to be like, hey, I'm going to come in here and mess everything up. He's got, in those same last games, he's got a 3.2 against Washington and then an 8.4 where Zeke's only got an 8. And he has an 8.6 where Zeke has an 8.9. So, I mean, they're splitting the load. And unless one of them scores a touchdown, you're just looking at yardage. And I think Zeke's a little high in that regard because they're not getting that many yardage, not getting more things. They don't have a dynamic back like Dak was. They have, I don't know, person back.
Garrett Gilbert? Potentially Andy Dalton?
So, I mean, these are not the same deadly playmakers that we see Dak is, because Dak can move his feet, he can rush. These guys, we're not seeing it with them. So, I think Zeke's a little high, in my opinion.
And I could piggy off of that because we saw for the second week in a row before their bye that Pollard nearly passed Zeke in fantasy points. So it's not like he's being heavily used more than Pollard, like you would expect.
The one thing to that, though, is that Zeke was dealing with an injury. I mean, he was questionable. We weren't even sure if he was going to play that week nine game. So now that he's through the bye, it doesn't look like he's carrying an injury designation. So I think those poor performances, a little bit of injury on him as well. Obviously, you know, losing Dak hurts his overall upside. I know the offensive line was also banged up. You know, getting Zach Martin back at the very least is going to be some stability for the interior of that line to help with running. So, yeah, that's maybe one I could probably put DeAndre Swift ahead of. I'd have a hard time moving him outside of the top 12. Maybe that's what it is. It's the Mike Davis Zeke line there. Of right on the cusp of 12 to 13. So maybe I think you might both be right. I've Kareem Hunt at 11. Do you think having two Browns running backs in the top 11 is too much?
That's no. Too much. No, I think they both get double digits. Because
I don't.
Because Chubb is going to get the work on the ground and Kareem Hunt gets a little bit, but then Kareem Hunt gets the value in PPR with the pass catching and they're both good for a touchdown. So, I mean, I start both of them weekly on the same team because of the upside that, you know, they possess. So I don't think it's too much.
Right now, it seems like those are the two biggest weapons on the team as both running backs. It's not Jarvis Landry. It's not Austin Hooper. It seems like the number one and two players on that fantasy team wise are both the running backs. So that's that thinking there.
Mm-hmm. I get it. They've been doing really good, but they're morphing into something, and we don't know what. And because Chubb just came back, so now we're going to see him and Chubb together on the field. One of them's going to get the pass catching work. One's going to get the rushing work. But Chubb's also a pass catching back. I mean, granted, he's more of a rushing back than a pass catching back, but he can still catch passes. And with them going up against the Eagles this week, it's going to be more of a passing game, and I want to see more Landry, more Donovan Peoples-Jones, more actual wide receivers than pass-catching backs, because Fletcher Cox and Derek Barnett up in the front lines, they're just a really good front line defense. Secondary is very suspect.
But I think weather's going to be an issue too. So it might be one of those situations where we've seen the last 2 weeks where they have to just run the ball again.
And if that's the case, then you're looking at rotation of running backs between Chubb and Hunt, which is great, except they still run into Fletcher Cox and they still run into that defensive line. And with Jack Conklin for the Browns being questionable to play, he's doubtful to play, we may not see the same offensive line that we've been seeing. Let me double check on that. But Browns injury report. Miles Garrett did not practice both days because of illness. And yeah, he did not practice Wednesday, but he did practice limited capacity Thursday. So maybe he may play, maybe not. But that defense is still up in the air. I mean, the offensive line is still up in the air, especially in a weathered environment. I mean, I don't see Chubb and Hunt doing it.
I mean, they both did last week. They were both top 13 in a very heavy weather environment. So. To be fair, that's the Houston defense is designed almost the same way. A very good front line. The secondary is absolute horrible. And so the natural tendency there would also be to pass. And if I know you want the Browns to pass. Truth is, though, the Browns don't want themselves to pass. The Kevin Stefanski thing, and I was questioning this a little bit too, but the narrative behind him is, oh, look how run heavy he was with the Vikings. My thinking was, but is that all Zimmer, though? Is that just Zimmer telling him to do that? And that's, he's just following Zimmer's orders. But now that he's in charge of the offense, we've seen it, the mix up of the different blocking schemes. And it seems like the details and the strength that team is through the run game. That's how they want to do. And so they want to run the football, and if they can, then they will. So I think that it reflects that. Now we'll go on to wide receiver. There's one player in particular that I wasn't sure if I ranked him too high at 6. Obviously, if I have Adams at 5, if he's out, then maybe he goes up even higher. But Michael Thomas, what are we thinking? I have him at 6. Do you both think that's too high? What's the thoughts on Thomas?
So I don't think it's too high, just because thinking back to how Jameis Winston made Mike Evans and Chris Godwin successful together. So even though Winston, you know, everyone's like, oh, he threw those 30 interceptions. Well, yeah, but he also had the 30 touchdowns. And, you know, even with Winston under center, I still felt confident starting Mike Evans every single week. I love Mike Evans in fantasy, and to me, it didn't matter who his quarterback was. So I would be confident in playing Michael Thomas, especially since it's at home against the Falcons.
The narrative I've been trying to push for years is that Drew Brees has not really been that great for 4 years, and that the success of this offense has truly come because of Sean Payton's mastery and designing guys to get open. And my whole thinking is Winston, his worst attribute above anything else is decision-making. On and off the field. But you see it on the field all the time with all the interceptions. If Sean Payton designs the offense to where Jameis Winston doesn't have to make decisions, where Thomas or Kamara or someone's wide open on every play, I think Winston can actually manage and maybe even thrive in that type of system where he's not really having to make decisions. It might be the perfect offensive coordinator for him. Because, I attribute a lot of that team's success to Sean Payton more so than Drew Brees.
I'm not going to get into that debate, but I see where you're coming from.
Yeah, I'd have more support with that if Ian Glendon was here. Alessandro, to talk about Thomas, or is there any other receiver that you see up there that you want to address?
I already know we talked about T. Higgins, but I'm looking on your list. Why is Henry Ruggs all the way at the very bottom ahead of Brandon Cooks? I know I'm fighting for the bottom here, but I want to give Cooks his due because the man has always been disrespected. I know there's J.C. Jackson. I know there's the McCourty twins, but there's no Stephon Gilmore. And So there's going to be a little bit of some trickery going on there. And it's in Houston. So a little bit of a home field advantage, if you want to call it that. I feel like he could do better than Ruggs against Kansas City. And I think he could do better than Marvin Jones against Carolina.
I would say the lack of stuff on Gilmore, I think, really helps Will Fuller more than anything. If the plan with Cooks is to try and we've seen teams do this before this year. They're doubling him, and they're really blanket covering, making it okay. We're not going to let him beat us deep. I think if the Patriots were going to do that, they're probably still going to do that without Gilmore. I think that's why I have Fuller maybe quite a little bit higher. Where do I have Fuller? 17. The lack of Gilmore, I think, reflects better on Fuller than it does on Cooks, who's hasn't really been that consistent. But I guess he's never really been that consistent. But the ceiling and the upside really hasn't been there this year.
And I know you have DJ Chark at 33, but I feel like that's a little bit too high against that Pittsburgh defense because I get that he's the wide receiver one, but that defensive line with TJ Watt going after insert guy's name here. I don't see the chemistry. I don't see the magic. And I definitely don't see the ball flying very far, especially with that Pittsburgh pass rush. So I feel like he's a little bit high in my regard.
So I like that you said that because Chark was out-targeted by Keelan Cole and Chris Conley individually last week, and Jake Luton only had one passing touchdown. Conley had a special team score, and James Robinson scored. Pittsburgh and Jacksonville also could be a low-scoring game. You talked about that defense, and we talked about James Robinson running the ball earlier. So I think that Chark, I'd make a case to sit him. I wouldn't play him. I also think that Brandon Cooks, you should start him. I think the bad weather in Cleveland last week hurt him. It ended his streak in PPR of having at least 13 points four games in a row. But Cooks still had eight targets, and that's a number that he's been at for five games in a row. So I think that he's becoming a favorite option for Deshaun Watson, and since this game is at home, I think he has a lot of upside against New England in a game that honestly could be a shootout. So I think Cooks could be raised, and I would drop Chark.
Would you just switch them? Would you put Cooks at 33, Chark at 38? Or I guess you're saying Chark should even go lower. But do you think 33 is high enough for Cooks is maybe the question to ask there.
Let's see who's around him. I think Travis Fulgham should be off this list completely. So I think that makes a case to raise him up higher. I think you can make a case to put him higher than Alan Lazard unless, what's his name? Devontae Adams doesn't play. Then, Lazard obviously raises higher if he plays. So there's a little bit of discrepancy there, but I'm nervous with Fulgham that, the weather in that game is going to be bad, like we already talked about. But Philadelphia has so many people returning that, we saw him just get, just kind of axed out of Philadelphia's game plan last week. And I see that happening again. So I think Brandon Cooks could be raised above them. I guess you could put him behind Mike Williams because he has a favorable matchup with the Jets along with DJ Moore against Detroit. So, yeah, I'd put him where Fulgham is and just take Fulgham off the list.
So not quite top 30, but you're saying raise him a half dozen spots or so.
Yeah, because going one by one would be really hard. So I need a lot of time for that.
The thing with Fulgham is, though, even with everyone coming back last week, he still played 88% of the snaps. So I'm not as convinced that he's going to get written out. But you're right, the weather, we've seen it in Cleveland. I think the problem with Cleveland is that the way the stadium faces as well, right on the lake, is perpendicular. So the winds are sideline to sideline, not end zone to end zone. So like, with Green Bay last week, it was, okay, this half, this team's doing better because they have the wind at their back. And, it's a little bit easier to pass if it's more about the strength. But if the ball's moving sideways to sideways as you're throwing it, that's where that gets really tough. I think that's the major problem with Cleveland. So you might be right. It might be avoid the whole pass game in general.
Yeah, I think I'm just concerned because Fulgham had his worst game last week. He only had one catch for 8 yards on five targets. So, maybe, it just happened to be you know, the matchup. I mean, I don't fear the matchup with Cleveland because we've seen, you know, how high scoring some of their games have been. But, you know, Alshon Jeffrey, Jalen Reagor, Dallas Goedert, Miles Sanders, I mean, Zach Ertz could also play. So it's just there's not enough footballs to go around. And we've seen this issue on Cleveland. There's not enough footballs. There's not enough scores. So, I mean, with how long Philadelphia has kept Alshon Jeffrey on that team when, in my opinion, they shouldn't have. And they brought in Jalen Reagor. And I understand Travis Fulgham is young, too. He's only, you know, he's only 25, and this is only his second year. I mean, yeah, but if you're putting him next to Dallas Goedert and Zach Ertz and Alshon Jeffrey, I'm not throwing a Travis Fulgham. Just my opinion.
All right. Are there any other wide receivers to address, or do we move on to another position?
Let's go another position.
So enthusiastically. All right. Quarterbacks or tight ends? I clearly don't want to make decisions.
Quarterback! Okay. I'll do it for you. I understand that Seattle's giving up the first rank defense in terms of yardage. But I think Herbert should be right there at number one because he is playing the Jets. And they did put Brian Poole on season-ending IR. They did cut Desir, Pierre Desir, and Arthur Mullett is now hurt getting an MRI on whether or not he's going to play or not. So they have literal rookies out there. And I think this rookie against those rookies with much better weapons is going to do better than Kyle Murray against the Seahawks, which Murray has the rushing upside, but the Seahawks are much better at run defense than than pass defense. And I think they're going to contain him just a little bit. And I think that Herbert's going to outshoot Mahomes and Murray because the Murray game, it could be defensive or it could just be this or that. But Mahomes may get sat once they get far enough ahead.
You're saying Mahomes has a chance to get benched if they're that far ahead? I mean, they lost to this team last time they played. And I mean, I don't know. The fear of, I mean, Herbert could get benched if they're far enough ahead against the Jets. Could he not?
Here's the thing about Mahomes. Mahomes is going up against the Raiders defense, and the Raiders just put 9 guys on COVID IR. Most of them are defense. So they're missing a lot of their regular key defensive starters.
And you just talked about how the Jets just lost a few players too, though, right? So if the,
yeah, I mean,
the
but arguments... they suck. At least the Raiders
well
are somewhat decent.
That fact. I think we all are.
At least the Raiders are somewhat good in defense. But you're right. Herbert may get benched. But I could see more points coming from Herbert before he gets benched than Mahomes. Because Mahomes may get benched at halftime. Herbert may actually go to the fourth quarter before he gets
benched. Oh, how do you even say that? I mean, I think if there's anyone getting benched, it's clearly Herbert. Again, they lost to the Raiders last time. I know that they've lost a lot of defense, or they're you know likely going to lose a lot of defensive players, but I don't think that the Chiefs can take a division opponent that's handed them their only loss this year lightly to the point where they're benching Mahomes at halftime. We're debating top three because I have all three in the top three. To me, though, the Seahawks-Cardinals game seems the most likely to be competitive to the end, which is, again, why I have Murray at number one.
Yeah, I mean, I have this decision. I have Kyler Murray and Justin Herbert on my team. And I think, you know, if Mahomes was ever going to be benched, it was going to be when they played the Jets. And we saw him up for 48 fantasy points, and he didn't get benched. And it was surprising. And I was shocked that they didn't run the ball more in that game.
I wasn't. Who had him ranked at number one that week?
Congratulations.
I only say that because you doubted me so much.
He got benched halfway through the fourth quarter. And he wanted to bench him sooner, but the only reason why he didn't is because Mahomes said that he wanted to be out there and he wanted to finish the game. That's the only reason why he got so many points extra that he did. Just saying.
Which, to be fair, Herbert doesn't have that kind of pull with the coaching staff where he can say, no, you're not benching me, right? Like, I have a hard time putting Herbert ahead of Mahomes and certainly ahead of Murray.
I think that the difference here is that I could see the Chargers having defensive scores against the Jets or having rushing scores. Now, I understand that Austin Eckler is still on IR and his return date is next week, not this week. And Justin Jackson is out. So, yeah, they're starting Kalen Ballage. And everybody knows how about Ballage. But he did have 60, 70 yards against the Dolphins last week. And, you know, while Herbert is a mobile quarterback, he's not as mobile as Kyler Murray. Kyler Murray has the most rushing touchdowns for a quarterback in the NFL this season with 10. And he has 17 passing touchdowns this year. So I'm not convinced against a Seattle defense that hasn't been able to stop anybody that they're suddenly going to be able to stop people this week. And I'm not convinced that suddenly the Cardinals are just going to hand off every rushing touchdown to the running backs this week. So the upside here is that I think that even if there are rushing scores, they're going to be to Murray. There's going to be a better chance that Murray scores them than Herbert scores a rushing touchdown against the Jets. So I think you have to lean Murray here with the upside, even though it's close. I mean, there's a lot of places where, you know, Murray's projected to score 31.5 points and Herbert's projected to score 30 points. So it's not going to be by a lot necessarily. But I think the upside is there more for Murray in a higher scoring game, potentially in a closer game, like Kyle said, than it is for Herbert in a blowout where we could see special teams and rushing scores that aren't from Herbert.
Hey, Kayla, how do you feel seeing Ballage score some fancy points and some yardage against the Dolphins?
It was frustrating in the third quarter, and that was it, because then we figured it out.
Look, I'm just going with Herbert, highest scoring quarterback this week. I'm sorry, the Jets defense with all their guys out, being suspect. There could be defensive scores, but there probably will be defensive scores, and there probably will be special team scores. I'm just saying Herbert's going to outdo them, because Herbert will just torch the hell out of the Jets, because they can't adjust their game plan to save their life. Because don't you know it's full tank season, baby?
So you are right, though. I have Herbert at 3, so I'm not doubting it that strongly. He definitely does have the potential to be the number one overall quarterback this week. But again, I prefer the upside with Murray and Mahomes more. So we'll find out. Hey, maybe, and if I'm wrong, you can rag on me next week about how I was wrong about not the number one quarterback against the Jets, and I didn't have him there.
I need Herbert to just go off, and I need Kayla to lose. That way I can just come on his podcast. Peachy is green. One other quarterback I want to talk about. It's two quarterbacks, but Ryan Tannehill and Joe Burrow. I think those two guys are just a little bit too high for where they are. I understand Joe Burrow plays Washington football team, but the Washington football team, I don't know how, but in a season that has turned it around, and they're actually a lot better and a lot more of a scarier defense than they were last year. And Ryan Tannehill is going against the Baltimore Ravens. And I think that those two guys need to be dropped just a little bit. I think Tannehill, at least behind Jared Goff and Burrow, I think he needs to go behind Baker Mayfield. Because I definitely think that Kirk Cousins is going to score a lot of points, especially if he keeps on Justin Jefferson against that Dallas defense. And I don't know what's going to happen to Baker Mayfield game against Philadelphia, so I'm just going to leave it there. But I know Burrow can score more points than Joe Flacco, so that's why I say I want to drop him there two spots and Tannehill at least one spot.
Problem with dropping Tannehill, I mean, Goff plays the Bucks. That's not a good matchup either. So that's why Tannehill offers more floor as a runner than Goff does. So I was looking at those two matchups, and yeah, I can't put Goff ahead of Tannehill. Maybe the one thing I might be able to do actually raise Tua Tagovailoa and make Kayla happy there. I have him at 17, but the Denver defense really is suspect. Like, I could see that maybe being something where I just shipped him up ahead of Tannehill. But like, I don't think I can't put Tannehill behind Goff, behind Wentz, in potentially really bad weather in Cleveland. And the thing with Burrow, if anything, I think I should have maybe raised, I thought I had him too low, if anything. Because, yes, the Washington pass rush has been good, but the secondary has been bad. And, you know, maybe the Bengals aren't the team to take advantage of all that. But Burrow's been really consistent, even in tough matchups this year. There may be one or two games where he really hasn't produced at all, but I just, you know, not, because the problem with Kirk Cousins is, yes, he could, you know, Justin Jefferson, Adam Thielen, they could produce a ton of points against Dallas, but it could end up being a Dalvin Cook, Alexander Mattison game where it's those two and everyone else is getting 2-3 targets. So it's almost too good of a matchup for Cousins, really, where they could, because, you know, if the Vikings, like you said, Alessandro, they could beat the Cowboys wherever they want. Like, there's holes in the defense everywhere. We know through with Mike Zimmer, if they can run the football, they will run the football. So if they can beat Dallas on the ground, they're going to throw it 10 times. So that's the... I mean, Cousins could score 2 touchdowns on those 10 attempts, and that'd be nice. But I just... I, even 19 maybe seems a little high. But yeah, I don't think I could put Burrow any lower than 18. And again, I was even almost thinking when I kind of first did these rankings, and I really am putting Burrow that low at 18 because he's been incredibly productive for a rookie.
So you mentioned Tua, and I'm nervous. You said it was going to make me happy, but I'm nervous because I think that Alvin Ahmed is a must-start this week, evident by me spending the rest of our dynasty money on him this week, even though I know that Myles Gaskin is going to come back next week. Well, he's supposed to, and take over for at least a committee role with him, if not just be the sole starter. But I think, you know, you alluded to it, that Denver's defense really isn't that good. And we saw, Josh Jacobs and Devontae Booker, of all people, torch them on the ground. So I'm not too certain that Tua's going to have to do a whole lot to necessarily lead Miami to a big win in Denver. I do think Miami picks up their 6th win in a row this weekend. And I think Cincinnati-Washington could be a shootout. I wish you had more space to put Alex Smith on here. I'm honestly considering starting him in a league. Alessandro, you're starting him against me.
I should have him on this list. Like, I mean, Philip Rivers against the Packers, I think the Colts are just running the football as much as possible there. Like, and Dalton against the Vikings, like, I don't even know if he's starting. Don't know if Bridgewater's starting. So yeah, I probably actually should have Alex Smith on this list.
Yeah, I mean, Alex Smith attempted 50 passes last week, and he had like almost 400 yards or something. I know he threw those couple interceptions, but I think it could be a back and forth game between Washington and Cincinnati. So if Smith throws 2 less interceptions, I mean, even if he still has some turnovers, I think he's in line for a great game. I don't know if Tua's 17. I think he could be lower. I don't think he's lower than Mayfield and Flacco, but I think those could move down if you take, Dalton and Bridgewater off the list. I wouldn't take Rivers off the list because of a stat I heard with how well he plays against Aaron Rodgers and how he has some of the best games of his career against Green Bay for whatever reason. I'm also debating playing Philip Rivers, and I know that now he's on Indianapolis and he used to be on the Chargers and it was an air game, so I'm debating that on whether to play Rivers or Alex Smith. What a debacle that is. Never thought that was going to be something this year. But I'm still going with, Green Bay has some people out on defense. So, even if it's Naeem Hines, I mean, we saw Michael Pittman shine last week. So I hope T.Y. Hilton does something. But, they still have those tight ends that are quietly, getting touchdowns sometimes. And if, they're 100% healthy, then they can use those 2 tight end sets in the red zone. And suddenly that game is really close. And it's the national spotlight. It's the late game. It's the 4 game. And it could be really good. And I hope it's really good. And I hope Rivers does well because I like him.
I hope he doesn't because I like the Packers. But it's funny because Jesse, one of the co-hosts on the Full Press Packers pod, he mentioned, Rivers is calling him the Packers killer. His quote was, "It doesn't matter if Rivers is 75 years old in a wheelchair playing for North Dakota State. If he's playing the Packers, he's a threat."
It makes me want to play him, but I'm scared. And I also kind of want to play Alex Smith. But man, I don't know.
My inclination is, because I have both Jonathan Taylor and Naeem Hines in the top 20, I think, of my rankings. So I definitely expect it to be a heavy dose of both, which is why I have Rivers, top 20 for both. So, yeah, that's my thing, is I think the Packers are more vulnerable on the ground. Although, absence of Jaire Alexander does loom large. I also don't know that the Colts have the receiving weapons to exploit that, though.
I know, and I don't want to let my personal bias and love of Philip Rivers come into play.
The other thing, too, the Packers learned how to defend tight ends this year. The tight end coverage has been brutal the last few years, but they've figured it out between Christian Kirksey and the 2 undrafted rookie linebackers, or one of them's undrafted. Kamal Martin was drafted. But Chris Barnes coming out of nowhere, and I could cover tight ends better than all these guys you've had on your team for years. Where was that, Blake Martinez? That's why, because I think in matchups where the tight ends could be good smash spots. I think it helps Rivers with the touchdown upside, but because this is not a good week for tight ends at all for the Colts, I do think he loses his edge a little bit. I mean, if Michael Pittman gets covered by Kevin King, like that's maybe Pittman wins there, but it might, you know, Kevin King's been pretty decent as a corner. So I think that's my hesitation on Rivers.
Oh, I'm going to play Alex Smith. Oh my God. I mean, I have Ryan Tannehill, but my hesitation is that he only had 88 yards, even though he had 2 touchdowns in the playoff game against Baltimore. And if I'm the Ravens, I'm pissed.
Yeah, Alessandro wants me to lower him by below 14, and I just can't. So I know my inclination there is to just play Tannehill, stick with the starters. I know I've been saying it with quarterbacks. Like, at a certain point, the matchup's tough, but you don't want to just raise him over random people. Like so, and I mean, to me, like, 14 is quite low for Tannehill. I have not had him outside the top 12 in any week, I don't think, this year. So, you know, even just to say 14, I think that's still low, but that's still, I'm not willing to go any lower than that. But again, that's my thinking with Tannehill. Maybe that's wrong.
The tight end.
Tight end song, yeah. Travis Kelce's back. Yay, the number one tight end's back this week. Anyone who didn't have him, yeah, well, he's back.
I know, now I get to use Kelce in my lineup, and it feels good. Feels right in the world.
Actually, it's funny. I've got both tight ends in that matchup, 1 and 2, Kelce and Waller. But they're probably glued in those two spots the rest of the year. I'm just literally just changing who the opponent is because it hasn't been pretty at tight end this year.
I like that you have Hayden Hurst so high. Kyle has him ranked at number 4. The big guy in Atlanta playing in New Orleans, I like the call because he went into the bye week. I like him in PPR the most. He went into the bye week in week 10 having 12 PPR points in 3 of his last 4 games, and he had no game under 10 PPR points. So he has 7 targets in 3 games in a row, and he should be a big factor. We don't know Calvin Ridley's situation. Has allowed 5 times this year to score at least 11 PPR points, so that's right in his wheelhouse. And double-digit points for tight ends puts you in the top 10, maybe even top 5 for the weeks. So I think that's a good call.
And I think it has a lot to do, you know, Hurst himself, but I think it's the matchup, because the Saints have just allowed so much production to tight ends this year. It's been pretty consistent. They're among the worst in the league at defending tight ends. So I think it's also exploiting that matchup. Now, when I did, you know, published this ranking, weren't sure if Calvin, I guess we're still not sure if Calvin Ridley's playing. So that there is some hesitation there. I mean, there's potential maybe lowering him below Hunter Henry if we find out Ridley's active, and then, you know, maybe less targets for Hurst. But I think top 5 this week is where he belongs.
Yeah, I mean, he hasn't had a touchdown since week 6, so that's a little frustrating. But I think there's upside there. So Noah Lawrence is also getting than guarding tight ends, so I think that, you know, builds a strong case. So
I'm sure Alessandro's saying I should move Hunter Henry up.
Well, of course.
How high up, though? Like Herbert, number 1 overall?
All the way up.
Okay, so you would put Hunter Henry ahead of Kelce this week?
No. I would just move him to probably just the 3rd spot. I mean, if it's not Keenan Allen or Mike Williams, it's Hunter Henry getting to work, since the Charger backfield is atrocious, and good luck trying to figure that out. So Hunter Henry probably be the 2nd or 3rd pass catching on that team that will do very well. So I could see him at 3, but not overshadowing Waller or Kelce.
You in the line at those two are basically probably going to be number 1 and 2 the rest of the way.
Yep.
Just want to look this up. Yeah, Hunter Henry is 2nd on the Chargers in targets, receptions, 3rd in receiving yards. So, I mean, I would argue he's even ahead of Mike Williams. You know, Williams has 17.2 yards of reception, which is why he has more receiving yards than Henry. But Henry's has had more targets, better catch rate too. So, yeah, I think Henry's been pretty consistent as you can get at it from a tight end perspective. No real big boom weeks, but he's been getting targets every week, and that's really all you need at tight end is guys that get targets.
Ooh, it was just announced Steelers will more than likely let Juju Smith-Schuster walk this free agency in this offseason. The Steelers will be around -$15 million in cap space for the next season. Damn.
Oh,
Yep.
yeah, Miami, here we go.
What? No. Get out of here, you. Seriously, they are negative in cap space, so there will be cuts and there will be restructuring.
Yeah, absolutely. You got to figure. Now, so were there any other tight ends to speak of, or are we good to get on out of here?
Let's see. I think Dalton Schultz is being a little disrespected at 17.
No.
Yes, I think he could be raised up a smidge.
Wow.
He has 15 targets in the last two games, and that was without Andy Dalton. I think Andy Dalton only helps that, and Minnesota has allowed five tight ends to score at least 11 PPR points this season, including three in its last four games. So I think CeeDee Lamb is also good in this game. So I think the back end, not the top receiving options, and this could be in for bigger days. So I think Dalton Schultz could surprise a little bit this week. And I don't know who I would raise up, you know, right off the cusp, but I think that he could have a bigger week than people are expecting.
I can see it with Robert Tonyan. And again, I've been really scared of that Colts matchup. Even if Adams is out, they've been so good at defending tight ends. So yeah, I guess my thing is the Vikings do have Eric Kendricks, who's been maybe their lone bright spot on defense, and he's really good at covering whether it's running backs or tight ends out of the backfield, and it's really forced a lot of the production to go to wide receivers specifically. So I think that's my hesitation there, but yeah, I could get it behind Tonyan. Tough to see top 15 though. I suppose if the weather is so bad in Philly that we don't think anyone could produce, then I mean, I've got Hooper and I've got Dallas Goedert both in the top 15, and like suddenly they drop, and you know, Schultz would then get into the top 15 if that's the case. So I guess it's still to monitor and see how bad those wins really are.
Bear.
No.
You're just a hater.
I am.
I mean, you started the episode talking about how you were going to crush him and lose, so what do you expect?
Return fire! no. What was I going to say? You got me off my train of thought here. Jared Cook. As of right now, I feel that he's a little too high just because we don't know who the quarterback is. It's more likely probably going to be James Winston. But I feel like he's a little high, and I don't know why. It's just this feeling that like that I don't think that he'll actually produce with James Winston on the field. I don't even think he'll produce with Taysom Hill on the field, but I mean, at least with Winston, he has a chance. It's just I feel like he's a little high considering the carousel quarterback. Plus, with Al Kamara possibly be out, they may need him a little bit more. But I see them going towards more trick plays. Definitely a lot of trickery with the moving parts, and I don't see Jared Cook doing a whole lot of it. I wouldn't drop him far because I feel like he'll do better than Tyler Higbee. But I definitely see Ebron and Goddard doing better than him.
And I think I know exactly why you're afraid of Cook. He's been really two back-to-back weeks, really disappointing performances for himself. I believe he had zero catches last week. So, you know, it's low time for Cook. And I believe the rookie Adam Troutman actually outsnapped him. Now, again, tight end snaps, maybe misleading because how much is being done blocking. One thing that's undeniable, though, the Falcons atrocious at covering everything, really, but especially tight ends. They've allowed the most fantasy points to tight ends. I guess depending on specific scoring settings, they may not be number one, but they feel like regardless of scoring settings, they're going to be in the top three of the worst defenses at defending tight ends. So play tight ends against them is kind of the thing. And so like you said, Alessandra, I've got Higbee at 13. Tough to see Cook below that. Tough to see him below outside the top 12 as a starter. But yeah, again, to me, I'm already kind of lowering him because he should be a top end tight end in this matchup, considering. So for me to have him at 10, I feel like that's already me kind of discounting the potential of disappointment there.
Yeah, and Taysom Hill could take some stuff away from him too.
And I guess it will be one of those things where, you know, if the Saints, maybe the tight end isn't needed against the Falcons. They can succeed against them with Michael Thomas, Kamara, and it might be one of those things where it's been more of an opportunity for those specific teams that the Falcons have faced, that's why the tight end production has been so massive specific teams that target tight ends more, but Cook did have a nice touchdown stretch going, but I guess maybe the return of Thomas again kind of caps that.
Mm-hmm.
It's, I mean, tight end's so disappointing. Whoever is the tight end seven on a week might be a disappointment, right? So, oh no, I have Jonnu Smith, the tight end seven. That's not good. He's not, Jonnu Smith's amazing. He will be great. No, but like you know, the top half of your starting tight end's good, and then the rest is there really any difference between tight end 8 and tight end 25? So it's hope for the touchdowns.
Pray for touchdowns. That's the name of the game. No, I just feel like, you know, Hooper can burst out because Philly's given up a lot of points to tight ends. So Hooper, to me, is a little bit of a wild card. And I feel like he could jump. Zach Ertz, I feel like he could do the same thing, but I'm a little bit wary of him just because he's coming back from injury or coming off IR from injury. And the only other person that is a little bit nerve-wracking to me is Eric Ebron, because it's a Jaguars defense that they're not looking so hot in some areas. Like they're decent pass rush, but that's against the offensive line, and that's a really good offensive line. And so it's just there's a lot of moving parts, and I just think that Hooper, Ebron, and you know what? I'll even throw in Gesicki, because Denver is not really that great of a defense against a tight end. I think those guys can actually just jump it, but I don't see Jared Cook actually going up and claiming a top spot this week.
All right, so any other players? Any final words on this?
You're going down, Kayla.
Of course, he was going to say that. But you know, if you have any words for us, you can reach us on Twitter at @FPC_FantasyPod. The triumphant return of Alessandro, if you want to. You can throw stuff at his DMs, apparently. It's at @AM_Senator.
Just slide up and oh, wait, that reminded me. I do have a trade, and I want you guys to grade the trade. So Julio Jones was traded for Cam Akers, DJ Chark, and DJ Dallas.
Is this a dynasty league?
No, redraft.
Oh, well, if it's a redraft, it's an A+ for whoever got Julio, and a F- for whoever traded away Julio for that.
Yeah.
Even in dynasty, that's pretty tough to do. I do believe long-term in Cam Akers, so I feel like in dynasty, you're getting a potential lead running back that you know, through his rookie contract, could be productive, but who knows? Still a risk, though. I can get behind in dynasty, but in redraft, that's inexcusable.
Yeah, I would be frustrated as a league manager. I would have vetoed that trade.
The only reason I could think of doing that is the person who had Julio literally needs to fill spots. Like, they don't have viable starters, and like Akers and Chark, and who was the third player?
DJ Dallas.
Like, basically, you're kind of banking on having to, like, if the person who's losing Julio needs to have all three of those players in their starting lineup because their team is that bad. That's like the only kind of scenario where if you're really stuck for depth and you can't get a better deal, I suppose that's your only choice. Like if you're, you know, better than taking zeros in starting lineups, if everyone's injured or you just really don't have anyone that's viable. But no, it's pretty awful.
And then there's another trade that happened. Deontay, and this is in the same league, so it's still redraft. Deontay Johnson and Joe Mixon got traded for Latavius Murray and Christian McCaffrey.
Yeah, I can get that one better. I can see, you know, if the person trading for McCaffrey believes that he will return this year, he's the best piece of the deal. I mean, we saw him one game back from an ankle injury, like a high ankle sprain that would, you would think would really limit his production, especially on the ground, and he was outstanding. So I get it for the risk of doing it for McCaffrey. Tough to lose an every week starter like Deontay Johnson, though. But that trade seems more equal to me.
Okay.
Kayla, any thoughts?
Can you repeat who the trade was?
No.
Then no, I don't have any thoughts.
It was Deontay Johnson, Joe Mixon trading for McCaffrey, and
Latavius Murray.
Thank you, Latavius Murray.
I think whoever traded McCaffrey was willing to sell because of the injury issue, and they wanted some pieces that they could use. And then the person who was getting McCaffrey is banking on being able to use them and being okay giving up some people, especially since Mixon was involved and he's been out for a little bit. So definitely not unfair at all, because, you know, you're giving up you know, people who could still be out for a few weeks while getting something in return. So I think it was well done.
I mean, there's risk on the McCaffrey side, but there's risk with Mixon. I mean, this week, Latavius Murray is going to be the best running back. So the person gaining that side does get something this week, too. And, you know, losing Deontay Johnson, they're probably putting Latavius Murray in their starting lineup. So, yeah. So that's a nice, well-rounded deal.
Okay. There you go. That's all I have.
Do you want to... So because it's so close, do you want to know which side you'd pick?
I know which side you're picking.
Yeah. I think it's obvious with me. Highest end upside. I'll take the risk that McCaffrey might play this year.
In the risk of it, you're getting a better deal on McCaffrey because Joe Mixon's hit or miss, and you're pretty much just looking at Deontay Johnson, which is an everyday starter, but Deontay Johnson versus Chris McCaffrey, you're better off with Chris McCaffrey. But to me, that trade is just like a matter of who you think can get the best reward, and it's the McCaffrey side.
Kayla? What about you? What side would you have to pick if you were forced to?
I like the Joe Mixon side just because with the news of McCaffrey possibly being shut down for the rest of the season, I always err on the side of caution and would like somebody that I could potentially play, especially if I know that I'm going to be in the playoffs. I'd like to always have a stock of running backs. I mean, I just picked up, somebody had dropped Myles Gaskin in my most important fantasy league because he's been on IR and the emergence of so many running backs in that backfield. I mean, I picked him up and I have Austin Eckler on my bench too, but I also have James Robinson and I have Nick Chubb and I have Duke Johnson who I picked up last week. So it never hurts to have running backs that you're hopeful that you can play.
Opportunity is key. And even Duke Johnson, you know, if we can worry about efficiency, he's going to get the opportunity. So, yeah. Anyway, so finishing with the outro, you can also, you like any trades, I mentioned, Alessandro's at AM_Senator, Kayla's at NorthDakayla74, I'm at Senra Says. As always, download the Full Press Coverage app, available for free on Android and iOS stores. Get access to all of the written content from Full Press Coverage, all our podcasts, and of course, access to the Full Press Radio Network. So download the Full Press Coverage app for free. I would say final thoughts. I feel like we've gone through final thoughts, but this could be the final time, at least this week.
Caligolos!
I'm ready for the Dolphins to win again. I'm so ready.
Why should they lose to Drew Locke and a Denver Broncos? That'd be hilarious.
It's not going to happen.
Never say never, any given Sunday, my dear.
It's not going to happen.
Any given Sunday.
Jacksonville's going to beat Pittsburgh, and Miami is going to beat Denver.
I know what I think is the more likely scenario of those two, but yes, anything could happen. Especially here on the Full Press Fantasy Pod.